Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center overlooking the historic steel bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Details about hosting a wedding or conference are at stoneharbor-resort.com. Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
So are you celebrating with the Eagles fans this morning? Okay, if you're a Packer fan like me, you likely didn't have a fan's rooting interest in last night's Super Bowl, but maybe your wallet had some interest. Billions of dollars were spent on last night's game on betting, and most of those bets were illegal, since Nevada is currently the only state where sports betting is allowed. That may soon change. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to rule soon on a case that could open up the doors for other states, perhaps Wisconsin, to wager on sports. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Kate Archer-Kent has a well-deserved day off, and I'm happy to be with you today. Our guest this hour is an expert on the economics and financing of professional sports, especially the economics of sports betting. He's Brad Humphreys, professor of economics at West Virginia University. As always, we'd like to hear from you on this issue, and you can join us by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Brad Humphreys, welcome to the program. I think it's safe to say that a lot of money was both won and lost last night. Prior to the game, the American Gaming Association estimated that bets placed on this year's Super Bowl would total about $4.75 billion, that's with a B, dollars. And yet, a lot of this betting is being done under the table. What are the current rules for sports betting in the United States? Mr. Humphreys? All right, I'm not hearing Mr. Humphreys, and I don't hear him on the air either. Can we find Mr. Humphreys for us? So, anyway, if you didn't notice last night, it was the Super Bowl last night. It was won by the Eagles over the Patriots, and I think they're one of the things that we're talking about sports betting, one of the things they do a lot are these proposition bets. We are reconnecting with the guest. We lost a connection with the guest, so we'll come back to that. But one of the proposition bets that's often held is the one that has to do with how many points will the two teams score, over or under. Well, last night was a wild offensive game, and I think the over probably made it last night. But again, the Eagles did win, lots of celebrating in Philadelphia, and we'll be celebrating soon when we get Brad Humphreys on the phone. Again, I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Kate Archer-Kent, and our topic today, sports betting. A big case in the Supreme Court called Christie versus the NCAA. The court has already heard the arguments, and a lot of court watchers are thinking that there's a pretty good chance that the court, based on what they saw in the courtroom when the case was presented, pretty good chance that the court's going to rule in favor of opening up more sports betting. Currently, Nevada, the only state that allows it. So that's an interesting aspect of this that we'll explore, hopefully, several different angles on as this hour continues. Again, our guest, Brad Humphreys, he is an economics professor at West Virginia University. Mr. Humphreys, are you with us?
I sure am, Dean. Good morning.
Oh, excellent. Great to hear you. Getting back to this situation with the Supreme Court, et cetera, lots of money bet on the Super Bowl last night. Can you lay out for us what the current rules are for sports betting in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're currently regulated by a federal law called PASPA that basically says that sports betting is fully legal in Nevada and Nevada only. And then there's two states that have sort of exceptions for limited sports betting, and sports betting is then illegal in the rest of the United States everywhere. And the other important regulation that covers sports betting would be the UEGA, Unlawful Internet Gambling Law, that would prohibit anybody from betting in any form online. So that would prohibit anybody from using, say, an online bookmaker that would be located somewhere outside the United States.
Thank you. And that brings us to that big Supreme Court case, Christie versus the NCAA. Court heard arguments last year, and a ruling is expected in the coming months. What's that case about?
Well, that case is about PASPA. Is about the regulation of what we want to think about here as bricks and mortar bookmakers, like you'd find in Las Vegas or anywhere in Nevada. So New Jersey has sued to try to get an exemption to offer sports betting at casinos and other locations in the state of New Jersey, and that case has sort of surprisingly made its way all the way to the Supreme Court. So if that was overturned, there would be probably an environment where individual states would be able to legislate what sort of sports betting that they would allow.
You said it made it surprisingly. What was surprising about it?
Oh, for people that I know who follow gambling law, didn't think that it would make it all the way up to the Supreme Court. They thought certainly that the Supreme Court would not decide to hear this case. And in fact, I want to bet with somebody who for a beer on whether or not it would be awarded cert and heard by the Supreme Court. So, and that's what I mean by it was surprising. It just most people didn't think it would make it that far because, I mean, Congress could, they thought that the most likely outcome would be that the Supreme Court would just kick it back to Congress because Congress at any time could pass a law that would override PASPA.
So if the Supreme Court were to rule in favor of Christie in this case, and that in favor of sports gambling, so am I able to call my bookie Ralph and place a bet on that night's Milwaukee Bucks game and be legal?
Probably, yeah. I don't. That would. Well, Wisconsin would have to first pass a law legalizing sports betting in the state. But conditional on that happening, then I believe yes, you would be able to do that.
Are there states that are ready, are doing that, trying to put a plan in place for legalized sports betting? So, if the Supreme Court does rule in favor of betting, that states can hit the ground running?
Absolutely. Well, certainly the infrastructure and the legal infrastructure is already in place in New Jersey, but several other states have already had bills introduced into their legislatures. My state here in West Virginia, for example, and Pennsylvania, that would pretty much as soon as the law would pass, but would be repealed by Supreme Court, that they'd be ready to go and have a legal framework for legalized sports betting. And that, you know, a lot of states that already have casinos would be the ones that would move quickly on this because potentially the revenues are substantial from the legalization of sports betting outside Nevada.
Now, gambling was once a real front burner issue with very vocal opposition. Back in the early 90s, most U.S. adults opposed legalized gambling. But a recent Washington Post poll shows that attitude has flipped, with 56% favoring gambling and only 33% opposed. Has this change factored in the desire for states to expand their gambling operations?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and this goes hand in hand with the expansion of casino gambling across the country. And as everybody knows, you know, even back in the 90s, and this, you know, there weren't as many casinos open around the country, and most of those were open on Native American reserve land or in New Jersey or Las Vegas. So, yeah, I think people have changed, and lotteries have expanded, and, you know, lottery games tied to sports or something like that have expanded around the country, and I think that, yeah, there has been a sea change in attitudes. I think, Dean, the interesting change, though, has been some of the professional sports leagues, which have been really opposed to sports betting, have now changed their tune. At least the NBA has.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, sure. I mean, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, just came out last week with what I thought was a shocking statement that he said, but it's not surprising, that should sports betting be legalized, that the NBA would like to have or wants 1% of the total bet volume on NBA games as revenues, because the NBA realizes probably that sports betting is coming and they want to be able to financially benefit from it. So, you know, the rest of the leagues haven't fallen in line behind the NBA on that, but it's not hard to imagine that they pretty quickly will.
So, you know, with sports betting, we'll get into that a little bit more in just a second. But as we move into our break here in just a bit, I was wondering if you have a sense. What I've been reading is that Supreme Court watchers are thinking, based on the testimony that was provided in court and the response by the justices, that pretty good chance that that the justices will go in favor of Christie. From what your research you've done, does it look the same to you?
Yeah, I'm not a Supreme Court follower, and I can't read the tea leaves in the questions that the justices ask. It seems to me, it makes sense to me, in today's fiscal environment, from an economic perspective, that the Supreme Court would likely overturn this, just so that they can provide states with more freedom to raise tax revenues.
Very good. Topic is sports betting, possibility of seeing an increase in the legalization of wagering on your favorite team or player. Economics professor Brad Humphries is our guest. We'll have more after news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Sports betting is our topic. Have you ever bet on sports? And if so, what was the allure for you? Would you like to see more sports betting legalized in states like Wisconsin? You can add to the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest is Brad Humphries. He's professor of economics at West Virginia University, and among other things, he studies the economics and financing of professional sports and the economics of sports gambling. We finished off talking a bit about professional sports leagues. Let's pick up the conversation there. With pro sports leagues and their stake in all of this, now traditionally leagues have been outwardly taken an anti-betting stance to belay fears of corruption or game fixing. I'm a little too young to remember this, but back in the early 1960s, big controversy, two of the big stars of the NFL, Paul Hornung and Alex Karras, both suspended from playing for a year because they were betting on games. What's the stance in this case? What's making them maybe a little more, as you mentioned, the NBA is hinting at the fact that they might be a little more open to this sort of thing?
Well, so first, In an international perspective, there are many, many, many other sports leagues around the world that benefit financially substantially from sports betting. For example, in Europe and in England, with the English Premier League, betting on soccer is very popular there, and it's so popular, in fact, that bookmakers operate in stadiums, and you can get a bet down during the match at a bookmaker in a stadium. So I think that perhaps North American leagues have looked around the world and realized how much money they're leaving on the table by not embracing sports betting. And I think the second change is that, sports betting actually can help, if you have active bookmakers, legal bookmakers, it can help to detect match fixing, because anybody who's going to try to rig a game outcome has to do it to benefit financially. They've got to get a bet down somewhere. And legal bookmakers, if they take unusual action on a specific game, can often alert officials that they think that a fix is going on. So there are some benefits in terms of like being the canary in the coal mine to detect match fixing from legalized sports betting.
Would there be any models out there? Would the pro sports leagues themselves benefit directly from the gambling? I mean, would they get a cut?
They could. It's possible that they could. It's unclear what sort of financial model is going to emerge in the United States. But there's certainly, I can imagine, some regulatory regimes where bookmakers would be taxed and some of those tax revenues would go directly to the sports leagues, depending on how much money was bet on them. That's sort of what Silver is suggesting in his comment. But, you know, there could be in arena advertising by bookmakers that would benefit teams directly, sponsorship deals. It's hard to imagine. There's many, many possible ways that leagues and teams could benefit from legalized sports betting.
The one model that's out there now is Nevada, but you know, their sports betting has been there for years, but the leagues aren't getting any cut of that.
No, they're absolutely not. No. And well, of course, they couldn't take any money from that because up until the last year or two, leagues have been so adamantly opposed to sports betting that they wouldn't dare take any money from it.
And let's touch on the elephant in the room here, the NFL, because, you know, that's the nation's biggest, most profitable sports league. Here's NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. He was on ESPN Radio talking about his concerns with this issue moving forward. And maybe we don't have that audio, but if not,
sure
that's fine. yeah, he didn't like it. So, how do you see that idea of leagues trying to preserve integrity factoring into all this? And can that be done? Is indeed legalizing maybe adding to the integrity of the game?
Yeah, I think it does. I've always seen the integrity argument as sort of a odd argument to make just because of the experience in much of the rest of the world. I mean, nobody imagines that the English Premier League doesn't have integrity. And you can, like I said, bet extensively on those sporting events. So, and, you know, you're right. The NFL is by far the most popular sport to be bet on, at least in the Nevada sports books. And so that would suggest that they would stand to profit the most from expanded legalized betting, yet the NFL has really been reluctant to get behind this at all. And it could be that the NFL still hasn't figured out how they can successfully monetize an expanded legal sports betting regime in the United States, and until they figure that out, they won't get behind it.
We'd invite you to join our conversation about sports betting. And you can add to that conversation by calling 800-642-1234. We'd like to hear from you, 800-642-1234. Otherwise, email ideas at WPR.org, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sports franchises are actually moving to Las Vegas for the very first time. That is actually an interesting development because last year saw the expansion of the Vegas Golden Knights, the NHL's latest expansion team, which is, by the way, doing phenomenally well for a first-year team. And on the NFL front, the Oakland Raiders will be shipping out to Vegas at some point in the next few years. Now, the long-time thinking had been that Vegas, where sports gambling is legal and professional sports, need to be kept separate. And so we're seeing that change. Do you think that's more evidence that there's a softening here of the major sports leagues?
If you would just look at the demographics of the size and income of cities around the United States that can support professional sports teams, Las Vegas was clearly the outlier for a long time as a city that was large enough and high enough income to have a team that didn't, and the implication there was it's because of sports betting. So, you know, the NHL going into Las Vegas and soon the NFL is another important signal that attitudes are changing and the strategic view of sports betting is changing among the sports leagues. You know, interestingly enough, the Las Vegas Knights are also have the most betting volume of any NHL team on them, and that's because, you know, the other reason that sports betting is expanding or looks like it's trying to expand is, I mean, people do like to bet on their favorite team, and it's those are complementary goods. Watching your team and having a bet down on your team or something that consumers really like, and leagues, I think, have come around to realizing that, and just are trying to figure out how to make money off of it.
Illegal gambling brought in the last full year that I was able to find statistics for it. 2015 brought in over $27 billion to local and state governments. That's legal gambling, and that's according to estimates by the Rockefeller Institute of Government. If sports betting is legalized, that number is very likely to go up. Is that potential payday going to be too hard for state policymakers who are generally struggling with budgets? Would that be too hard to pass up, even if they're skeptical of gambling?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that kind of money, and when you realize that, you know, the sports betting has a lot more appeal even than, say, lotteries, which is the source of a lot of those state revenues that you just quoted, Dean, because, you know, you have a lot better chance of winning a bet on your local team to win a game than you do on winning the Powerball. So I think it's going to be really difficult for legislators to pass up a new revenue stream in a time when, you know, taxes are being cut and states are facing a lot of austerity measures. I know in Wisconsin you're struggling with that as well. You know, any safe port in a storm looks good, mm-hmm. and sports betting would be one of those. And, of course, we do have to remember, and I would be remiss if I didn't point it out, that, you know, expanding gambling opportunities does bring costs to society. And some people, unfortunately, can't control their actions and will ruin their financial lives and the lives of their families through problem gambling. And that's an important thing. You know, anytime you expand gambling opportunities, some of that's going to happen. And, you know, I guess states in regulating their environment will also need to take into account that some people are going to need help if they make gambling, sports betting legal in their states, and they need to plan for that as well.
There's a group called Stop Predatory Gambling that filed a brief in the Christie versus NCAA case. They call state-sponsored gambling taxation by exploitation. Speaking to the negatives of gambling as it relates to addiction, et cetera, how much influence do you expect that argument to have in the court's decision?
That's difficult. I think that, well, you know, certainly in any full sort of cost-benefit analysis sense, you would hope that the court is taking that into account and that they realize that, you know, there's no free lunch in legalizing sports betting. There will be some negative consequences for society. But, you know, I think that I would suspect that they will ultimately view that as the job of individual state legislatures or individual states to figure out exactly what the right balance and mix is when they make their decision.
I wonder, you know, in balancing, go ahead.
As I understand it, key legal issues in Christie v. NCAA is just whether or not the federal government can regulate this, which something which should, is seemingly for the Constitution, be more under the control of states.
Right. As we look at this, getting back to the kind of the economics of states, you know, some states where socially gambling may not be as accepted. Is there some thinking, even among maybe more conservative policymakers, that, well, we may not like this, but it's happening anyway, so we may as well get a piece of it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there we can see parallels with, say, the legalization of marijuana in states across the United States, right? There's certainly states that have fully legalized recreational marijuana use have reaped substantial tax benefits from that activity. And I think in many states, the legislatures will view sports betting in a similar vein.
Is it, as an economist, is it a sure thing that sports betting would be a windfall for the states that legalize? In my early days at Wisconsin Public Radio, we reported on the legislature's decision to allow parimutuel betting in Wisconsin. Five dog tracks popped up, and all but one of them has failed, and that one struggles. If a number of states go for sports betting, won't it just dilute the profits?
That's not clear to me that sports betting is the same as dog racing. I mean, dog racing has been in decline as an industry for a long time, just as horse betting, horse race betting, has been in decline. But the popularity of sports, you know, sports betting is linked to a different underlying event. That is just the general popularity of professional and college sports, which doesn't show any sign of letting up, as far as I can tell. Well, I mean, we could talk about the NFL and CTE and things like that, but in general, those things have increased, and when the underlying activity you're betting on is becoming more popular, I'm pretty sure that sports betting is a pretty surefire fiscal winner for most states should they choose to legalize it.
Sports betting is our topic. We're speaking with Brad Humphreys. He's an economist with West Virginia University. You can add to the conversation by calling 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. So did you have any wagers flying around at your Super Bowl party last night? Did you win or lose? That'd be fun to hear. But more fun would be to hear what you think about the idea of the possibility of legalizing sports gambling if the Supreme Court lifts that veil and allows it to happen in states. And, you know, do you think the state of Wisconsin should go for something like that? As far as I know, I'm not aware of any legislation in the works for that at this point, but if the Supreme Court makes a decision in favor of Christie in the Christie versus NCAA case. Maybe that's something that you'd like to see or would like to see us avoid. Now, back to looking at the betting, and this is an area that's really grown through the years. I'm in a fantasy football league that got its start back in 1981. We need something to do because the Packers were awful back then. So, that league's been going for a long time. It's a bunch of guys got together, and I made it to the Super Bowl this year. Thank you. How much of this whole thing is being driven by fantasy sports, and more specifically, those daily fantasy sports online, which have come under a lot of intense legal scrutiny?
Yeah, that's a good connection, Dean. It's very close because, you know, those one-day fantasy games certainly came under scrutiny, and there was some legal rulings about whether or not that was gambling, and some states actually had to address whether or not that was gambling because it looks a lot like gambling from an economic perspective. So, in fantasy sports, drive up interest, increase fan interest in following games and watching games, in buying publications or subscribing to publications that cover games, so you can get more information. And leagues have realized that fantasy sports help their bottom line. And I think they've encouraged that. I mean, the leagues were certainly, the NFL certainly was very interested in getting involved with daily fantasy betting we won't call it betting, daily fantasy sports in terms of the NFL. So, yeah, and, you know, from a broader perspective, NCAA basketball tournament pools and the mm-hmm. brackets has tremendously driven up interest in that tournament. And, you know, the NCAA makes $1 billion a year or something off the television broadcast rights for the men's tournament. Those things are indicative of the fact that people like to have something at stake, even if it's just a friendly wager with their friends over fantasy football in sports outcomes. So that's another driver of this.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but It makes me curious in Nevada, which is really our only model for a state that has legalized sports betting, are those office pools for the NCAA basketball tournament or the one where you fill out the squares with the numbers, the kind of thing that you might get at a bar here in Wisconsin, are those things still prevalent, those sort of unofficial, small-time sort of things happening around an office or a bar? Does that still happen, or is it all strictly the legal sports betting as structured by the state?
Well, Dean, that's a really interesting question, and unfortunately, I don't have a good answer to it. I'm not certain. I guess maybe you could talk to somebody who studies gambling in Nevada and find out if that's the case. But I would guess that it's probably still popular because, I mean, you know, office pools or the buy a square on the Super Bowl outcome on the scores at the end of the quarters, that's a social gambling activity, and I think the presence of legal sports bettors probably wouldn't reduce interest in those sorts of things because that's something that we like to do together with our friends or our colleagues, and it's more for entertainment than it is for the financial ability to win money if you win your office pool.
Well, I don't know what the weather's like in West Virginia, but if you want to fly to Vegas, I wouldn't mind it if we wanted to go study that issue a little bit more. Hey, we break for news. We will be back to continue our conversation with economist Brad Humphreys about sports betting. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the morning show. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Would you partake in sports gambling if it was legalized in Wisconsin? And what questions do you have about the future of sports betting in America? As always, we'd like to hear from you on this issue, and you can join us by calling 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, tweet us at WPR Mornings, or post on that Ideas Network Facebook page. It's actually The Ideas Network is the name of the Facebook page. Our guest is Brad Humphries. Brad Humphries is a professor of economics at West Virginia University, and he's particularly expert in the economics of sports gambling. The reason this topic is coming up, in case you missed the beginning of the show, is the fact that there's a court case that was heard last year that we're expecting a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court on soon, called Christie versus the NCAA. And maybe, Brad Humphries, for the sake of those who weren't with us, a capsulized version of what it is that that case is about and what a decision might mean if indeed Christie wins the suit.
Sure. Dean, the case is about New Jersey's desire to legalize sports betting and allow their casinos to open up sports books. Under the original law that governs sports betting now that is addressed in the case, New Jersey had a sort of limited carve-out where they said that because at the time that law was passed in the 90s, Jersey had casinos, if they wanted, they could pass a law that would legalize sports betting in their casinos within 1 year. And then they like New Jersey, like Nevada, would be the only states where bookmaking was legal. New Jersey, for some reason, didn't manage to pass a state law within that one-year time period. Then several years later, New Jersey wanted to expand sports betting, and they couldn't. So they had to try to, you know, legally force this to happen. As soon as New Jersey said, we're moving forward on our own on this, all the professional sports leagues, plus the NCAA, as the case name suggests, immediately sued to stop that because, of course, as we know, they said that would ruin their product. And that's how the case wound up in the Supreme Court eventually. What would happen is if the Supreme Court would rule against the existing law, PASPA, one likely outcome is that individual states would be able to regulate their own form of legal bookmaking.
And then the question becomes, which states would want to get involved in that sort of thing by passing laws to regulate that?
That's correct.
Wisconsin actually has a very interesting gambling history. If I'm young enough, or I'm old enough to remember I keep wanting to be young, but no, I'm old enough to remember back in the 1960s when Publishers Clearinghouse would do advertising on the television, and there was always a little scroll at the bottom of the screen saying, not valid in Wisconsin. Wisconsin didn't even allow people to participate in sweepstakes back in the early part of the 1960s. I think it was the 70s that bingo was finally allowed, and then raffles were allowed. So those two things kind of came into play in the 1970s, and then there was an escalation of gambling as Native American treaty rights were interpreted, and according to the courts, correctly so, that if Wisconsin passed gambling, then the tribes were allowed to interpret bingo as whatever type of gambling that they could equate to bingo. It escalated to the point where the state eventually allowed a lottery back in the late 1980s, and of course it's been going ever since. Anytime policymakers, though, talk about the introduction of new gambling, there are always concerns about the impact of problem gambling. And I'm wondering how you think this shakes out with sports betting, which is an activity where you don't necessarily have to go to a casino, but rather you can make a phone call to your bookie or punch in some numbers on your computer, all from the comfort of your own home.
Well, that's interesting. So, first, one interesting regulatory twist on this, Dean, is that, you know, you mentioned punching a number on your computer, but this whole case, Christie v. NCAA, does not have anything to do with internet gambling. So, I mean, some people might imagine that the expansion of sports betting that might occur after, depending on how the Supreme Court rules, would allow you to make a bet on your smartphone, but that's certainly not the case. There's a different law that governs and regulates internet gambling in the United States. So we're really only talking about bricks and mortar bookmakers, and this would not involve your ability to get a bet down on your smartphone. Which, I mean, this is important then for problem gambling, because, you know, problem gambling is clearly the worst in activities where you can, you know, quickly get another bet down. So that would be things like casino gambling, slot machines, or it would be things like scratch-off lottery tickets where you can, you know, run through a lot of bets very quickly and get into financial problems. So, you know, whether it's unclear how that works for sports betting, because, you know, most people want to bet on the outcome of a game, and we don't see a lot of in-game betting on sporting events. So to the extent that there's sort of a natural limit on how frequently somebody would be interested in betting on sports, maybe some people believe that the problem gambling negative consequences is mitigated relative to, you know, slot machines.
We share stories, or we hear stories, of lives being ruined, families being shattered by problem gambling. We talked about this a little bit earlier. We've seen people turn to crimes like theft and embezzlement in order to try to catch up or maybe come out ahead. As an economist, can you determine if this factor is considered when states weigh the pluses and minuses of state-sponsored gambling?
Yes, I think it is. I think in most cases where I'm familiar with debates about expansion of gambling, it's certainly taken into account. And I think, you know, people, regulators, legislators, people who would control sports betting realize that it does have negative consequences. And, you know, typically you'll see some of the government revenues that are received from gambling specifically dedicated to research or to treatment centers for people that have gambling problems as a consequence. Or, you know, there'll be billboards with call-in numbers to put those people in touch with help that they so clearly need. So I believe that this calculation does get taken into account pretty important in a pretty prominent way in any debate over the expansion of legalized gambling.
Now, I know Las Vegas takes bets on lots of things. I mean, the most common would be, let's say, for the Super Bowl game, I'm going to bet on the Patriots or I'm going to bet on the Eagles, and there's a point spread involved, or you can get odds. But you can also, you know, sports bets for the things like the Super Bowl, where everybody kind of wants to get in on it. Some people bet on whether the national anthem would be shorter or longer than 2 minutes, whether Justin Timberlake would wear a hat during the halftime show, or, you know, again, put money on over under on how many times the announcers mentioned the temperature outside the stadium. I mean, all those things are things that we heard about yesterday. Is there a chance that people who might not have a proclivity to bet because they don't know about sports would want to get in on things like that and make some bets like that? Or is it likely that if sports betting does expand to other states, that sort of thing would probably not be part of the picture?
Oh, I think it would. The jargon for those bets are proposition bets.
Right.
I think that would expand as well. I think there is interest in proposition bets for entertainment value. I don't think anybody's trying to, you know, get rich by making those bets. But, you know, bookmakers of PASPA's overturn would lead to the creation of some form of brick and mortar bookmakers in states that wanted to do that, and bookmakers, those are profitable bets for bookmakers, because the odds are typically really bad on those outcomes. That means they make a lot of money off of it. So I'm certain that should bookmaking be made legal, or states given the right to legalize bookmaking, you would see those sort of bets. By the way, my favorite from last night was the proposition bet that a kick would hit the upright, which of course was paid off in the first quarter.
Did, yeah.
There was a missed extra point.
Yeah, there was another prop bet I heard about that there would be no field goal longer than 43 yards, and that was the case right up until the end of the game when the kicker for Philadelphia made a 46-yarder. So I didn't have anything on that, thank goodness. So that's just fine. Hey, are there other ethical issues? We've talked about a number of things here, but are there other ethical issues to consider when talking about the legalization of sports betting? You know, because this may end up being something that shows up in our legislature at some point.
Pretty quickly. It sounds like Wisconsin has some budgetary problems, so it's not hard to imagine they'd move quickly on it. Well,
it depends on, you know, it depends on who you're talking to, but yes.
You know, Dean, I'm an economist, and ethical issues are something that sometimes economists like to steer clear of. But you know, mm-hmm. some people just might have an ethical opposition to, you know, state sponsored. There's a substantial sentiment in the United States that gambling should be illegal on moral grounds or on ethical grounds, because it's wrong. to do that. And it'll come up, and certainly in some states where we might see no move towards legalization of sports betting. And I think in most of those states it'll likely be because of ethical objections just to the state sponsoring any sort of activity which has a negative consequence.
Thanks for joining us in this conversation. As we wrap up, I know you're anxiously awaiting the result of Christie versus the NCAA and the Supreme Court. Outside of that, anything else that you'll be watching on this issue going forward?
Oh, I think that the whole internet gambling is closely linked to the expansion of sports betting. And I'll be watching to see if there's any movement in Congress to undertake some sort of comprehensive overhaul of all our gambling regulations, because I recently wrote a paper on gambling regulation in the United States, and relative to other countries, we just have the most ridiculous and poorly designed regulatory system that one could imagine for governing and regulating all forms of gambling, internet gambling, and brick-and-mortar gambling. And I would look for Congress, maybe, because that's where these laws come from, to undertake some sort of wide-sweeping, comprehensive reform.
Brad Humphries, thank you for joining us. Brad Humphries, a professor of economics at West Virginia University, and among other things, he studies the economics and financing of professional sports and the economics of sports gambling. This hour of the morning show is produced by Chris Molina and Keely Bultina, and Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Coming up tomorrow at this time, Glenn Moberg tackles the issue of kids operating farm machinery. This is the morning show on the Ideas Network.